Here we go.
They call themselves the
Heroes Asylum.
Uno, morons.
Welcome, everybody, to Heroes Asylum, episode 149.
Are you out of your mind?
Took us a while to get here, but we got here.
Yeah, we're here, almost to the magic 150. So, yes. Like you said, it took a while.
It did.
The turtle crawl, but we're going to get there. It's all our, it's a journey.
Yes, exactly. So, how was your week? We haven't great. Really talked all week, I think. I mean, No,
we haven't discussed anything. It's been pretty good. I had some stuff to do on Sunday, so obviously we couldn't record when we're supposed to. But no, everything's been kind of chill. Just we were talking off air about some TikToks you sent me, your audiobooks that you've been finishing, that you've been reading, which are fascinating, by the way. I really think you should do a sort of like an editorial on that book you were telling me about the buffalo and the vampires.
Yeah, if anybody's interested, check out, if you can find, I think it's Stephen Jones is the author, or Stephen Graham Jones, I think is his full name, but he came out with a book recently about less than a month ago. It's called The Buffalo Hunter. Really, really great book. It's not horror, but it's kind of supernatural. But yeah, it's definitely a fun read. I just finished it today.
Yeah, and the premise you told me about it was just fascinating. Like whatever he takes a life from, he basically inhabits like the buffalo horns and the Indian sort of background. So it could go a lot of places. I definitely have to check.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested. He really kind of hinted in the tail end of it that there might be more to come. So I'm kind of interested to see if he does. But, you know, there's a lot of books out there. I've still got on my TBR to read. Every hardcore book a fan does.
I just finished MCU, The Reign of Marvel Studios, on audiobook. And it's a really fascinating listen. If you guys are big MCU fans like we are here, I mean, it's basically a lot of the behind the scenes, the actors, like what went on. And, like, interesting casting they were going to do, like where they got some of their ideas from. Just really a great listen. So if you get a chance, do listen to that as well.
So this week, or this month, actually, I take it back, we're starting a brand new month. This month we are talking horror. So we talked about our favorite horror movies last week. This week we're going to talk about our favorite horror characters. And I kind of suggested let's not do our favorite horror villains. That's kind of cheating. But
And too easy, too.
Yeah.
Like, you'll get same names, and like that's not really fun. So
I thought our best horror characters. Now some will be villain, you know, will be the big baddies. Some will be the good guys. I mean, you know, the scream queens or the scream kings, depending on which route you're looking. So we're gonna go ahead and get started. I'm gonna give you the floor, man.
Oh man, I appreciate that. Good looking out. My first one is not necessarily a villain. But what I would dictate is probably like the first kind of like, I would say like almost an anti-hero. And that's MacReady in The Thing. I love his character, man. Like, to me, that's the first like intro that I got of Kurt Russell as well, especially with the beard. I mean, I think he did Escape from New York the following year or the year before. I'm not sure. But this was the first one for me. Phenomenal like performance. Just like just creepy at the same time, like him like just smelling out the blood. Hey, you know, whoever's going to get the blood, and they have the blowtorch and all that. To finally confronting The Thing and like all the suspicion, all the craziness going on in that film. And he was at the center of it. And I was like, this guy is like dope. Like he seemed like just a supreme badass. So my choice, MacReady from The Thing, sir.
Nice. I was looking at The Thing and I was like, you know what? No, I know Jeff. That's a baby to him. He's hardcore on that. So
hardcore thing, man. I will defend that movie. Even the prequel isn't horrible. I think that was released in 2004. Not a terrible movie. Not as good as the OG, but it definitely kind of filled in some gaps. If you wanted those.
Well, hold on now. That wasn't the OG. The Thing you're talking about is actually a remake
of the original, which was in 1932, I believe. Yeah, of like the Thing.
My grandfather actually watched that in the military. They were on an army base up north. And it was snowing when they watched that. So he told me, he's like, yeah, we all mess with each other, you know, being in the snow and stuff. But I mean, just imagine your first experience is like watching that in the snow.
That would freak me the hell out.
Well, it's like the have you seen the I know they do it here. I don't know about up north if you guys do it that much, probably during summer, but here we get a little bit more time out and outside in nature. But they have movies in the water. And like imagine what having to watch Jaws while you're like sitting there in your little
That would freak me out. That's a no for me. Like no. I ain't doing that. But yeah, that's an experience.
Yeah.
Watch movies that way, so I'm sure especially the water one. Like, oof, but
I'd love to see them doing, because I know down here we have our cornfields and we do like the cornfield mazes and everything during Halloween. Like, but doing a movie in a cornfield.
Yeah. And that would be crazy. Can you imagine that? Especially like the first Children of the Corn.
Oh, yeah. Played that.
Oof. Woo. What was that? That kid is so creepy in that movie. So what you got there, sir?
My first one, I sort of went with a baddie. And I have to say this one really hit me as a child. We really didn't see much about this person until like at the second. But Reverend Henry Kane, also known as the Beast from the Poltergeist movies.
Oh,
that
not
creepy old fucking dude, man.
Caroline. That yeah. I freak. Oh,
yeah. See what I mean? That guy just—I mean, just his presentation and his speech and just the look. It was just it was great. He played I think it was Julie. Yeah, Julian Beck was he did it on the second film, and then Nathan Davis did it on the final sequel. Unfortunately, both have passed away. But yeah, no, it was just like in his whole backstory of being this like apocalyptic, satanic cult leader who they were trying to bring him to a utopia. And then you find out those are the bodies from the first movie. And it sort of intertwines. But just his presentation and just the imagery of him through that screen door just always got to me.
To me, like, not only that, but the way he talked, because he talked almost in like a little kiddie way. And it's like, yeah, I'm like, and that it just made it more creepier. Like, he looks creepy on as a whole, but then he starts talking, it's even creepier.
See, I'm always a fan of like of Southern Gothic and Southern horror,
yes,
because
yes,
of that accent that we have down here in the South, and well, more Northern South, like in Georgia and Alabama area, where you get those types of accents. And if you throw it into a creepy vibe or even into a religious vibe, that's just this whole other level. And that's exactly what he did. And just, like I said, yeah, just gave me the creeps. All of
there was kind of a run at the time of like old people being like sort of like creepy, like horror villains. Do you remember like Phantasm had the tall man? He was almost like the same type of dude. All he did was control that little orb to kill people. But he was creepier than the orb. And the orb was doing all the killing.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Okay, I guess I'm going next. One of my favorite film, not franchise, actually has like four or five films it's been out. It's kind of like sticking to that Southern vibe. This is like a Southern killer, right? And you think I'm gonna choose a Southern killer, but I'm not. I'm choosing it from the same film series, and that is Mary Beth Dunstan from Hatchet. You ever watch Hatchet? She's like the main like final girl, and she's a badass in that film. And like, if you have never watched Hatchet, it is gory as hell. Actually, before I started recording with Mike earlier, I was watching some scenes from like Hatchet movies, and they showed Tony Todd, the late Tony Todd, aka the Candyman, and he's fighting Hatchet as like he's like some sort of undead zombie, and Hatchet Man is just literally just chopping him in half, chopping him in half, and finally he kills him by just ripping him out of his skin. It's wild. But I love this series, and she's like the main heroine, and like basically she is hunting Victor Crowley, who is the Hatchet. I mean, if you ever watch Supernatural, they spoof it big time. I forgot what he's called. Do you remember that, Mike?
No, actually, like I've never seen those movies.
Never?
No, never.
Oh, man, you are missing out. You have to watch Hatchet. All of them. They're all great. All gore. Make no sense. Ridiculous. Like, just murdering. But you would love it. Check out the Hatchet movies. But yeah, Mary Beth Dunstan is mine, and she's a supreme badass. And I think she's played by Danielle Harris, who was the she was the little kid in Halloween 4. Like, supposedly that was Michael Myers, like the cousin or something like that. So she played that. So she has a ties to horror.
Nice. I'm going a little old school. I'm sticking the 80s, because again, that's where my my love is for horror. I mean, we if you guys have never listened to our podcast on BAM, Badass Midnight Movies, it's still out there. We did horror, and we always talked about how we were always big sweaties on the 80s slasher, because that's really like, yeah, there was 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, there was horror movies, but like the horror genre kind of came into its own in the 80s, so I'm going to go to probably one of the biggest franchises, and they're still going. In fact, there's a television series getting ready to be dropping here shortly for Friday the 13th.
Oh.
But I'm not picking a villain. I'm picking Tommy Jarvis. Because he is one of the few Scream Kings. When you look at him, he broke the mold of a surviving boy. Because it's always the girl that survives in horror movies. That's like the cliche. You got to have the girl survive. Mm. But with Tommy, he was, like I said, he was a rarity. He survived. He was played by two different actors, Corey Feldman and Ted White. And in the fourth entry, he played, it was played by Corey, and he was a boy. And Jason came in and went after him and everything. And that's, if nobody's ever seen it, it's probably one of the coolest ones. Is like literally like Corey, like Tommy, like shaves his head. Like Jason's like morphed, head.
Oh, I remember that. That was freaky. So that was that character.
Yeah, that was Tommy.
Like mimicking it was Jason, and it was a weird obsession. I always found that kind of weird, but it was kind of cool. I guess it was a little ahead of his time, but it was a little nutty.
Yeah, and then the following two sequels, Friday the 13th, The New Beginning, and Friday the 13th, Jason Lives. Tommy's recast, John Shepard, Tom Matthews did those respectively, and it's just like the first movie back is he's like suffering from like extreme PTSD, sort of similar to like Nancy in the Nightmare on Elm Street. She's the second movie, she's a little off.
Doesn't she end up in a psych ward? I think
so. That's why I'm referring, because in my head.
I think that's the beginning of part two, where she wakes up in the psych ward, and she's just like having nightmares, and then it just goes from there. Oh, that's a good catch. Good character too.
Yeah, but between him and Nancy, actually, are the few protagonists that continued for multiple movies, other than probably one of the biggest ones. But I don't know if it's on your list.
We'll see. But excellent choice there, sir. Thank you for that. My next choice is sticking to the 80s horror. Again, he's probably an obvious one to me, because this is like one of my favorites of all time. And actually, they redid this movie with the female taking over as like the central villain. Same thing, and which was even creepier, I thought. I thought she did a great job, and that's Hellraiser. I fucking love Hellraiser from the original. If you watch that movie for what it is, it's a great horror movie, because it's breaking down when the demon actually returns, and you can see, like, especially practical effects wise, they show like the skin decomposing and then like it's like reanimating itself throughout the entire film. To the reveal of Hellraiser, I mean, Doug Bradley, what a badass. Not only like performance, like that whole makeup wise with all the pins and the S&M style, which obviously they copied during the time, but like the way he was emoting and talking as well throughout the film, just very like strict and like this, like almost preaching like. And they were like made out to be these hell priests. He had the Cenobites and all those characters, and they were creepy. So, and it was violent and gory. It had to do with the cube. You had to solve the cube. If you open the cube, you're fucked, basically. You're basically unleashing hell. So that Pinhead from the Hellraiser series, sir.
Yeah, I absolutely love those. Those are one of my favorite series. Just the change from it being a dark horror, almost borderline gore when you think of it. Especially when you think about that first rebirth on there, but then slowly it turns in and like it becomes Pinhead and the Cenobites like movie series, because they become sort of like the anti-hero, and you start kind of like leaning towards them, like, okay, I kind of like these guys.
Yeah, because they're literally like just killing people who had like bad thoughts or something like that. So they were just preventing stuff. That's the way I look at it. Like, you know, you get too greedy, then you end up with like a weird clock in your stomach. If you watch like the newest one, they had like so much gore and like inventive, especially with like the body horror. So good. But you can never go wrong with Pinhead at all. And I think Doug Bradley, he played her him for a while. I think the last one was Hellraiser. Yeah, I even liked Hellraiser in space. I know it's dumb, but it's kind of like, you know, you like Jason X. Well, Hellraiser in space is that for me. I like it. It's a little silly, you know, when he gets defeated by a computer, but you know, I accept it.
Jason X because it's funny. That's the only reason why. Like, there's nothing scary about it.
There's nothing. And it's also ridiculous, like, to the 100th degree. It's just like, okay, now we've done everything with Jason on Earth. Let's take him to space.
And which became a joke for other franchises, like Fast and the Furious. You know, what do they do next? Well, they go to space. And what do they do? They end up going to space.
Go to space. Yeah, that's it. You got to have that moment in your franchise. Like, all right, let's go to space. So that was that one for me. That was Hellraiser in space. But yeah, Pinhead, man, you can never go wrong with the leader of the Cenobites.
Exactly. No. Mine is kind of a flip flop of what I did with Tommy. Tommy being the protagonist that survived, being a male protagonist. We're flipping this, and we're going with the serial killer, who's a female serial killer. And I introduce you to this movie and this franchise when we were doing the Midnight or the BAM series. I'm talking about Pearl from X.
Oh, yes.
And then the follow-up movie of Pearl, played by the same actress. Mia Goth. I mean, great series. It's where it goes. It's just like you don't expect. I remember the first time I saw it. And folks, if you want to go back and listen when we're watching that, like I said on BAM, the other podcast, that was Jeff's first watch, and his reactions are just great, because that's what we were trying to do, is like bring in things we've never seen.
Yeah, newer movies, yeah, that we can react to. I think we have to do that again. That was fun. But yeah, like that scene alone, like the gunshot, I was like, whoa, 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 what do we have here?
And then the follow-up was Pearl, which was a prequel to X, and you know, followed Pearl as a younger person, and also had our future Superman. He was in Pearl.
Oh, David Cornshaw was in there?
Yes, sir. Yeah, he was on there as the projectionist. In the movie, so
I have to watch that again.
Yeah, you got to realize. I mean, this is nice things when they do casting like that. We're just like, okay, he's an actor. He's got some credit, so we know he can do the job. But we don't recognize him from anything else to slap on to Superman. You know, like we did with prior actors who have done like superhero roles. You know, like obviously your favorite, you know, is Batman. Pretty much every single one of the actors had been. And something else, so we like projected that onto, you know, Mr. Mom can't be Batman. What the hell?
that's true. That is very true.
And then, again, that's something that I think you and I've always kind of talked about. It's like, no, we want an actor, but we don't want to have a named actor that we like. The second you say their name, yeah, you're like, oh yeah, I remember him from that.
Yeah, like a second tier guys, I'm good with. I'm not good with like big actors for like big roles. I'm like, nah, like because it's like saying Leonardo DiCaprio Superman. Like, well, no, like he's not gonna do that. He doesn't fit it at all. He will never do it. So it's just, best to go with an unknown or like a second tier guys, I would say.
But folks, if you have not seen it, it's a trilogy. It's the, what are they calling it? I think I just call it the X trilogy. I think that's what it is. But you have X, Pearl, and then Maxine, and X follows a group of kids, very a la Chainsaw Massacre, where they're going renting a farmhouse to, well, basically make a porn in the 70s. And all sorts of hijinks ensue. And then Pearl follows the prequel of X. And then there's a Maxine, which jumps into the 80s.
And, I like Maxine.
Yeah.
I like Maxine a lot. I just dug the way it was shot, like a 70s movie. It was so like different and weird, and you find out like the revelations, like her dad gets involved. I thought it was like a worthy sequel. Like it's a worthy trilogy. Like they're all solid movies. Are they great? I mean, come on, depends. But like they're all goodly acted. That like you said, like a female serial killer, which is kind of weird from like different perspectives, like the past.
And yeah, other one I can't think of many female serial killers except like in movies, except for maybe like Jason's mom. I mean, I can't think of any really off the top of my head. I mean, lately, I guess we've gotten a few. Like, if you look at Megan, there was another one recently, too.
Is Megan really a serial killer?
Sort of. I mean, let's just say it's a horror genre.
I was going to say, have you watched that second Megan trailer? You talk about like going to space.
Oh, that was
like, what are we doing?
I got words about Megan, so but we'll move on.
I'll tell you what, I'll be fascinated to see it.
Yeah, I'll probably still watch it.
Okay, I guess I'm gonna go. Little known horror movie, I think it was like in the mid aughts, called Hereditary, and which I loved a lot. And Anna Graham, I think she plays the mother in that movie. Her character in this movie, she's not really the villain, sort of, but like you take a journey with her, and it starts with like how can I put it? It's like something happened in her past that led to her future that was going to be something of a, she was going to be a servant to like a hell priest. And like, she didn't believe it. She went down a rabbit hole. And the more she went down the rabbit hole, the more she just started slowly becoming possessed by that entity. And basically the son has a lot to do with it. There's a beheading in this movie, which is out of nowhere. And it leads to like these crazy emotional moments and scenes. And it just gets nuttier and nuttier and then more frightening. And then the ending is like, okay. But to see her progression as she gets like, she was a calm, kind of cool mom, and then she goes down that rabbit hole. She slowly disintegrates and gets possessed, and it's just an insane the way they pace that. I think she won an Oscar, believe it or not, for that film.
Did she really? Oh wow, I didn't.
I think so. Yeah, I have to look that up, but I think she won, and well deserved, especially after this flick. But Hereditary,
which is an oddity to have somebody win an Oscar from a horror movie.
Yeah, like it never happens. That's like one of the first times. I think they've been nominated, but I don't think anybody's ever won. So,
very good.
Definitely check that out. What you got now, sir?
I'm going. I don't know what you would call this character. He's sort of the victim, but at the same time, he's not. Kevin Wendell Crumb from the Unbreakable series.
Ooh,
the Horde. Ooh. When you take, ooh, like the first Unbreakable is not really horror, but when you dip into Split and you dip into Glass, you get more of a supernatural like horror vibe going on. And the fact that he's got like 23 different personalities, but the Horde, the main villain, is just, I mean, just the idea of how he did it. I mean, everything that McAvoy did in those movies was epic. I wish he would have gotten an award for it, because, I mean, just to be able to jump around and do what he did was amazing to see. But just that the Horde and how he changes not just, like, the guy's personality, but actually switches it and becomes physically.
Physically, yeah. He changed, like, a completely, like, when he was doing the other sort of, like, entities in him, it was basically like a change of like a facial expressions and dialect. It was not really like anything kind of physical, but with the Horde, you saw him become like the beast, and you saw him like physically change too. I think he was like climbing on walls and trains. It was nuts how he was like, that entity was like far beyond anything. Yeah. I wish he would have got a nomination for that. Like, yeah. I thought that change alone, like, God damn, like, where did this come from? Like, you went this, and then you went there. Like,
yeah, it's just,
he doesn't get talked enough about.
Yeah, and I mean, a great trilogy too. On top of that, I've never been a big M. Night Shyamalan fan. I think Unbreakable for me, and that trilogy was probably the best work he's ever done. Yeah, you have what's the I See Dead People movie? I liked the twist, but once you've seen it, you're kind of over. But just the series, and then just how they brought everything back into the first two movies, and then when they come to Glass, you get like all the characters and actors that were in the other two movies all like back together again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's probably one of my first times ever seeing Anna Taylor-Joy coming.
Right, she's in the third one, I believe, right?
She's in the third one, but she's also, I think she was in the second one. Sorry, she was in Split, yeah.
Oh, I might have to watch it again. I didn't know that was her.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, yeah, we're talking 2016, so almost 10 years ago. So, you know, she's quite a bit younger.
Jesus. 10 years ago? I mean, you feel older than I am.
Well, I'm bumping it up to, it's 2016. So, I mean, we're there.
We're basically there. Yeah. Just say 10 years. Just, it's okay. You're not hurting any feelings here.
So, what do you got next?
I got a fun one. And, like I said, our premise is always like different, like villains, protagonists, antagonists and all that. But I also like kind of fun characters. And this guy's played this role forever. He's beloved. especially in the cons, like in the geek community. And that's Ash from the Evil Dead series.
There you go. I knew that'd be our, that'd be our repeater.
I mean, what else can I say? The movies were great. If you've never watched the TV series, I think it's Ash versus Evil Dead. It's right up there too. Like it's basically on par with those movies. Like it fits right in. Add some things that didn't make any sense, but I don't give a shit. Like it's a lot of logic issues. Like what? And then in season two of Ash versus Lee Majors, if you know you're old enough, remember the $6 Million Man. Not as old as Mike and I, because you know that's the only two people who remember it. But he was in it as Ash's father, which was also funny. Ends up dying, and like the whole series was dope. The movies are all dope. I mean, what can I? Even the video game they released a couple years ago. I'm not sure if you played it.
It's fun. Did, too. Yes, yeah, it was fun. Yeah,
it's a fun game too. It's actually this guy Bruce Campbell. Still, he's recorded his own voice. Of course he would. I mean, he whores out for this character. This is how he makes his money. But you know what? I don't care. Whatever it costs, any series, I want to see more Evil Dead. I want to see more Ash. And yeah, it's easy. No brainer choice.
Yeah, no, that actually he was on my list. Thankfully, we always put more on our list than we say, because we know every once in a while we'll have a double up, and that was it. Same thing with me. Ash is just great. There's like a core memory for me. My high school girlfriend and I, one of our first dates actually at her, like stay-in dates at her mom's house, was to watch the Evil Dead series. And I think it was pretty new that that the Army of Darkness had just come out, and I think that was like a big thing. And
that's right. It did just come out. It's early 90s, I believe, was it not?
Like I said, she was my high school girlfriend, so I graduated in 94. So yeah, we were freshmen, so 90s. Yeah,
that's when I graduated. Shit.
But for me that had that meaning there, just because, you know, like your high school sweetheart's always like special to you, at least for me. Aww. I don't know about you. You better fuck, but
say it louder.
I don't have to. This goes around the world. but that was a big thing. And also, it's my gamer tag.
Oh, is it?
My gamer tag is Boomstick74, or my Boomstick74. I didn't bet you that you didn't know that one about me.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I'll have to go play Diablo and wait for you to join in one of the games.
But yeah, that's again. Yeah, I had him as well. I mean, and granted, I love the first one more than the others. I feel they went campy, and then like leaned hard into it, which I love the campy side. But as a horror movie, the first one. It's just ridiculous.
I would agree. Like the first one's probably still a legit most horror one. Then the rest gets.
The second one's literally, it seems like a remake of the first one, just with a camp edge.
Yeah, it's more goofier. It's just like, okay.
And this is so much in the lexicon. Even in the second Doctor Strange movie, during when they're in the other world, you see the car.
That's
going
right.
In the storm that's going on behind him.
Yeah, that's right. Good catch.
And if nobody's watched the most recent, the remake or the reimagining of the Evil Dead movie, watch it. It's a damn good movie right there.
Both of them, and it's straight horror. There is no camp.
No, there's no camp. They took that out.
If you've never watched it, watch those two, because the same guy who did those two movies, I believe he did Alien Romulus too, which we both like.
Oh yeah, great movie. Yeah,
yeah, it's equally as basically. If you have watched any of the Alien movies, if you recall the premise they were trying to do for Alien, I think was Alien 3, where they wanted to merge like sort of like the alien human DNA, and a Goofy in that movie had like big eyes that looked like a Care Bear. In this movie, they take that same idea, but they make it horrifying.
And by the way, that movie is referenced in the Avengers. Peter Parker.
Oh, is it?
Peter Parker brings it up to Iron Man.
Is it Alien 3?
Yeah. Well, remember when they sucked infant Ness out the spaceship? Yeah. He's referring to.
I thought he was talking about aliens.
No. Maybe he could be, since they're kind of basically the same ending in a way. But the Romulus one basically takes place between Alien and Aliens and kind of does a little filler, which I think was great. Had the actor that played, or not had him, but had that robot that played Kane. No, no, Kane was the one that had transferred. Ash in there, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, that was really cool. I think they got like some kind of like a
CGI.
It was perfect. And it fit right. Like, it looked exactly like from the 70s too.
Speaking of the 70s, my next character is probably from one of the biggest hits in the 70s and launched a career of probably one of the biggest directors we've ever had is Quint from Jaws.
I knew you were going to take him. I don't know. I just had a feeling you would take him. I was like,
I just feel Quint just like locks in the fear factor more. I mean, we've already had not seen the shark. We've already gotten that, but there's just a certain level that Quint brings to it, to the show or to the movie. And Robert Shaw nails him perfectly.
He's a badass too, you know, especially the scenes when they're all getting freaking drunk and wasted. And then he's talking about what happened in like the submarine he was on.
It was a battleship.
Battleship, yeah. And he's talking about how like the fear with the sharks, and he just goes down his rabbit hole and it gets creepier and creepier. Like, God damn. Like,
well, a lot of that scene, I mean, not the story of the USS Indianapolis, that was there, but some of the scenes in that cabin were actually ad lib. So they were kind of bouncing off of each other a little bit. And I mean, just great. And I mean, he is literally Ahab. There, if you, you know, he's Moby Dick's biggest villain. 100%.
Like they allude to Moby Dick so much in that movie. It's like it's basically a better version of Moby Dick, or a less ridiculous. Because you know, when you read the book, I mean, it's a giant white whale. I mean, is that really realistic? Yeah, come on. But this one was more realistic because of the size of the shark composed of man, and like man versus fear and fear versus man and all that. So, but yeah, he's a great character. He makes that movie to me.
And again,
like,
his intro is beautiful. How he comes in with his nails across the chalkboard. and if anybody's listening and doesn't know what the chalkboard is, look it up online. You'll see what it sounds like when somebody drags their fingernails across the board.
You know, I'm kind of you could have chosen also like the Richard Dreyfuss character too. If you did, I was like, that's a coup, because his character was more of like the fear aspect, all of it. Like, you know, questioning, like, oh, like he was going down that rabbit hole too.
Honestly, I was leaning more towards Brody because he literally plays the fish out of water character, and his progression is really good. But out of the three, I just felt Quint he upped it with just his introduction, his story, his behavior towards everybody around him, and then just his exit from the movie in that scream is just
horrifying.
It's just,
and the way and they show it too with the practical effects. I mean, with the shark, and it's even creepier because it still looks real.
Yeah, it does.
And that's like over like 40 years old.
Yep.
And they haven't touched that movie. I think they've done it on HD somewhere, which I would love to watch. But you don't have to touch that movie. I know they've talked about like making a remake.
We've got enough shark movies that and those other shark movies are just, they stand on their own. I mean, the Deep Blue Sea series, you and I think we've done one or two of those movies. Those work. Any of the Megs work. I mean, they don't need to be touched, because everybody else has gone like, hey, we can still do a good shark movie without touching Jaws.
Which they have, like they've made everything but Jaws.
Yeah.
So I'm just glad. And just don't touch it. Just leave it alone. Keep going ridiculous. You know, and there's, like you said, there's been a lot of good shark movies out there.
There's been a lot of bad shark movies out there too. But those bad ones are kind of good. I mean, we got, you got Sharknado, for God's sakes. I mean, how many movies came out of that?
that's your favorite, man. Not mine.
Reason that was so fun is the Winchester. Whenever that movie was on, and if it was a slow night at the Winchester, they'd kill the jukebox and they would turn on the volume to the TV, and we would all sit around watching Sharknado. Yeah, which was so fun. It's a dead Tuesday night at a bar. Hey, Sharknado's on, and that's what we watched it.
I would say there'd be worse ways to spend your time, but exactly. I can't. It is just ridiculous, but hey.
All right, out of all the things, we got time for one more piece, man. So let's.
Okay, so I guess the last one I put on there is a straight up villain, and he's had three versions, 3 versions over the years, and each one of them were really good. They were kind of different in a way, but they all kind of fit the same way. And that's Dr. Hannibal Lecter of the Silence of the Lambs. And I say any version.
Any version?
Any version. There's 3 versions. Anthony Hopkins, great. I believe it's Mads Mikkelsen or Lars Mikkelsen. He played him on the TV show, which I'd never watched, but a couple clips. He looked like he was good. And I think there was a 3rd actor, Brian Cox. He played him in a movie called Mindhunter. If you watch that one, that's really good. So all 3 versions were really good. And then, of course, his charm, his intellect, the way he could just break you down. And this man is a cannibal. This guy eats people, but he's cool about it. He's very suave. If you watch the TV series, it just goes back into like that he was a psychiatrist. Like, it's totally different, but really good. And like I said, any version that came out, like, just like, very different, but it just fit the whole character as the same way. So I would do the Doctor, sir.
All right. And I guess my last one, and I'm kind of not going with a main villain or main protagonist. I'm going with actually the protagonist's friend or conscience, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Goodman from American Werewolf in London. He was the friend that actually got killed. And as the movie progresses, Jack's spirit is haunting the main character and warning him what he's going to become throughout. You remember American Werewolf in London, right?
Yeah, I remember.
You remember the ghost that followed him? He kept getting like bloodier and gorier.
Oh, his best friend that he was walking
with. His best friend, yeah, because his best friend's explaining to him, this is what's getting ready to happen to you, dude. Like, you're getting ready to change, and he's
a good character.
He's sort of like, I don't want to call him his conscience, but he's there to warn him. Nobody else can see him, but he's there to kind of help David like along the way. First, like as David's like recovering in the hospital, and he's heard about Jack's death. There's Jack, and again he's gnarled up, you know, chewed on, because he was attacked by the werewolf at the very beginning.
Right, and I believe you checked the archives. We did a watch along to this, if I am correct. I could be wrong, but shenanigans happening that night. Let's just say it was an interesting recording that night.
Through the movie, Jack just like brings him in. Jack was he beckoned him into like a porn shop in Piccadilly Circus. Yeah. I mean, he brings him along and try to get him in a little trouble, but. But as it goes along, it eventually, as David dies, Jack is basically freed from his imprisonment on Earth, because we don't see him. Because I guess there's another trilogy or the sequel to that was, I guess, David's like bloodline, his daughter or something gets like.
Oh, is it? Oh, that makes.
I didn't watch the sequel.
American Werewolf in Paris.
Paris, yeah, I think, yeah.
They had a good Bush song that came out from the soundtrack. Like, the soundtrack was really good to that movie.
That's the best part of your movie is a Bush song? Kind of telling you.
What do you have against Bush?
Nothing. I like doing their songs in karaoke, but I just, you know. But yeah, so yeah, like I said, I kind of needed to go outside the box because I knew we were going to be hitting some big ones. And I just, he always intrigued me in that movie of like what he was and how he, you know, how he kind of led him through his transformation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like the slow progression as well. The practical effects use him as well. Like when you first see him, he has like the scar bite and it slowly, he starts decomposing. Each time he sees him, he gets worse and worse and worse until he becomes like a corpse. So that aspect was really cool. And then that eventually David breaking down and eventually becoming the werewolf. And, you know, him, like you said, him having to die and kind of be redeemed, and especially with, I think he had a girlfriend too in the movies as well. And like that relationship, like she loved him, but, you know, it was already too late.
Yeah. All right. So that is our horror characters.
Yeah. That was fun. So we've done that and TV shows and.
No, no, we got TV shows coming up, right?
We did TV shows. TV
okay.
Shows. Yeah. Next is. It's going to be fun. We're doing movies.
That's right. Okay. Sorry. Yeah, we did TV shows. And that's right, because Supernatural is off limits. No.
It was off limits. Yeah.
So this one will be movies. All right.
Movies.
All right, guys. So like I've said, we are out there now. Obviously, if you're hearing us, you know where we are. But do check us out on Facebook. We are slowly bringing that back alive.
Yeah, I'm sharing more stuff on it, more content. I'm going to keep trying to update it almost every day. And anything I find interesting, I'll just put on the page. And shoot us a like, share, like, and all that good stuff.
All right, guys. We will see you next time.
See ya.